Welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome Lindsay W. from Texas, a compulsive overeater.
Hello, thank you. And hi, everyone. My name is Lindsay, and I am a compulsive overeater. And yes, I am here in Texas. So I'll just give you a few quick stats. I have 5 years and 4 months of food sobriety. I am maintaining a 200 plus pound weight loss and have been at a healthy body weight now for over 3.5 years. And it's so, you know, like when I say those things, it's just sort of like, yeah, there you, right? But it's like, oh my God, like I have been like, I haven't eaten compulsively in over 5 years. Like how did that happen? You know, like I was walking around this world at 350 pounds at 5'3". I didn't want to be alive anymore. Like I had no life. Like I was like literally pooping in my pants in my car. I couldn't do air travel without upgrading to first class, and I didn't have the money for it. So I would just incur insufficient funds fees by paying for flight upgrades. You know, I had an eviction notice on my apartment door when I was in my mid-30s, like literally was getting kicked out of my apartment because I was spending more money than I made on delivery food. Like that's who I am. Like that is who I am in this disease. Like I am like a heroin level addict with the food. I am gutter level compulsive overeater, you know, and I've had people before in OA meetings come up and say, wow, I've never heard a share like yours outside of like NA or something. And I'm like, good, good, because someone has to be saying this stuff. And it's uncomfortable to talk about sometimes, but like for anybody here who's in it or has been in it or can't get out of it, and you're in the depths of despair that I'm describing, like just hang on, you know? And I used to come to meetings. I actually remember very vividly like Sunday evening meetings that I would attend on the phone. And I remember my route, you know, of the binges and the places I would drive through while listening, you know, listening to the speaker share and thinking to myself, they don't understand me, you see. Right? Like I love what they're saying and that's so cool. But what I'm experiencing is different because I can't possibly stop, you know? So I really did believe that this was not going to work for me. So I would like to just quickly share, my photos with you so you can see, the physical manifestation of the disease. So, as I said, you know, physically, this disease manifests itself in my life as extreme morbid obesity. And I'll just tell a couple of stories as we walk through these photos for identification purposes. So the one on the far right is at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. So it's think it's like the biggest rodeo in the world. It's a really big deal in Houston. And the CEO of our company had come in to take our leadership team to the rodeo. So here I am, and I'm always trying to be stylish, right? Like I've got my denim jacket or I've got my little headbands. I'm trying. And we went to an NFL football stadium, when it's one of the ones where there's like ramp, you walk up and then the next ramp and the next. I mean, it is like a lot of walking at inclines. And at 350 pounds, that felt like I don't even have words to describe it. It was beyond difficult and beyond humiliating because it was like I couldn't really breathe. But I had to keep talking and trying to pretend that I could talk and I could breathe. And I felt like I was going to fall over. And it was like a horrible experience because I'm spending my entire life, like energy every day, just keeping up appearances, trying to appear normal so that everybody thinks I've got everything together. When, I mean, it's very clear that I don't. But I'm trying, because I'm not a bad person in this disease. I'm just a very sick person, and I didn't have a solution. I didn't have a solution at the time. And so we get to the very top of the stadium, and then I go to the bathroom to like gather myself, and then I realize I'm not going to be able to fit in these stadium seats. This is going to be a nightmare. So I ended up leaving. I told my boss I was sick, and I left. And that was the story of a lot of my life, is that I avoided situations and people and canceled plans and just wasn't able to show up for myself, for my life, for the people in it. These are just some other photos that show the physical manifestation of the disease. And then these are some photos that show what my life is like in recovery. And to be really clear, yes, there is a significant physical transformation in my story. But I always like to share this particular sentence in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 64. It says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So, what you're seeing here is the result of the spiritual malady being overcome. This is not about, okay, what did you eat? What's your diet? Did you exercise? How do you do all of that? No, it really isn't. This is what you're seeing is physical evidence of a spiritual solution. And I love the name of this meeting. I think it's called There Is a Solution or something about the solution, right? And that the solution is not the food plan. The solution is that I worked the 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book. I followed the directions, and I now have a connection with God, with a power greater than me, which, by the way, I did not want anything to do with the word God when I walked in here. So if you too don't want anything to do with that, it's okay. It's okay. I promise that it can still work for you. So I take my nephew to football games. This is me with my niece and my nephews at Disney World. And the experience of Disney World in a healthy body is like so much fun. It was the greatest time walking all around, riding all the roller coasters, didn't have to think twice about fitting in a seat, anything like that, And something else I like to share in this photo is that, this disease, there are consequences. There are consequences of having a fatal illness. And one of those for me is that, this disease stole my childbearing years from me. And that is very sad for me sometimes. And I experience grief of that. I experience loss. And also, I get to experience gratitude of having these four precious angels in my life and others and other ways that I get to show up and help people. I have a purpose. I get to be a mother in other ways. But something I've learned in this program is that I can feel all the feelings and I do not have to use food. So I can be really sad and I can experience significant grief. And I have a design for living that allows me to sit in the pain and not use food. And that is not something I ever thought was possible. That's probably one of the biggest miracles of this recovery for me, I gotta say. These are some photos just of me out living life, traveling with family on the right. It was my the first big book retreat I led in Oregon last year, which was amazing. These are some photos with fellows, my sponsor, a sponsee, some of my dear sisters and friends. Look, I love traveling all around and spending time with you all, getting to know you. You're my best friends. And I didn't want anything to do with a group called Overeaters Anonymous. I didn't even want to walk in the rooms. I would sit in my car and watch you walk into meetings for years, and I wouldn't get out. I love looking at these side by sides. I'm a huge sports fan, and this shows me at I was at a World Series game. The Astros were in the World Series. I had these amazing first baseline tickets. I mean, this is like bucket list experience. And all I wanted to do was get the hell out of there, because I just took up so much space and I just apologized for my very existence, And then here I am on the right with people from Overeaters Anonymous at a Los Angeles Angels game. And I just love showing the juxtaposition of the two photos. And then this is just like a progression of me at the same event over several years. So again, the physical transformation is it's just like it's a byproduct of what I've really gotten as a result of working these steps. But I think it's important to show the photos because, as my sponsor says, people really lean in when they see photos and evidence of a physical transformation, which I'm grateful that I have, right? Not everyone in these rooms has such a dramatic physical transformation. We all have various ways that this disease manifests, none better or worse. But for me, if there's ever a moment where I'm like, and I am like this sometimes, is this higher power thing real? Like, this is all weird and makes no sense. And I don't understand it. I can't define it. I can't understand it. Like, what am I praying to? Am I praying to thin air? What's going on? And I just have to look in the mirror and say, well, clearly, I mean, there's no other explanation for this transformation than a power that is greater than I am, because I got sober with the food when I was 39 years old. And for 39 years of my life, and really 44 years, I mean, I'm 44 now, I've never wanted anything more in my entire life than to stop eating compulsively. Ever. Nothing. Like, I didn't want children more. I didn't want good health more. I didn't want anything more. Then I wanted to stop eating and I absolutely couldn't do it. And again, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells us this is the baffling feature of this disease, the utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. And when I read it through with a sponsor, we said this is the terrifying feature of this disease, right? It's terrifying that no matter how much I want to, and no matter how much I need to, I cannot stop. Like, what are we supposed to do with that information? I can't want it or need it enough. So then what am I supposed to do? Seriously, like, what do I do? And look, my experience is that I'm actually looking for something in the big book. Oh, it says here at the top of page 25, but for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. So many want to stop but cannot. So why why am I stopped? Why am I stopped? And people I love dearly in these rooms and out, in my family, in my life, why can't they stop? Why can I? And it says, but for the grace of God. And that's what I believe. And the grace means unmerited favor, something that was freely given to me. I am no better. I am no more deserving. I didn't do anything right that somebody who's in the food right now didn't do. And I wish I had a formula. That's a really humbling thing as a speaker, right? And as a sponsor and as someone sharing experience, strength, and hope, because I can absolutely tell you what I did, but I can't tell you how I got the willingness to do it. And because that came from a power that's greater than me. And I love listening to a lot of AA speakers, and something I steal from them is this idea of God separated me from the food. God separated me on March 31st of 2021. God separated me from compulsive eating, from my alcoholic foods. And every single day that I have stayed stopped is a result of God separating me. Because left to my own devices, I'm back in it. Left to my own devices, I am gonna eat pizza when I am feeling upset. And I have to tell you, I have had a rough weekend. I'm not having a very good day today. And in fact, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this share without crying. Like I'm having a rough weekend. I'm not showing up in a way that I'm proud of in my relationship this weekend. I'm highly emotional, and I'm seeking external things to fill the void. And I think But what it always comes back to, and what I know deep in my soul, is that there's one thing and one thing only that fills that void. Everything else comes up completely lacking, completely dry, completely empty, right? Like it's only this higher power thing. It's only this spiritual way of life that fills the hole in my soul. And on the exact same page I just opened the big book up to, it reminds me, if you're as seriously alcoholic as we were on the bottom of page 25, right? If you're as seriously alcoholic as we were, if you're like me and you couldn't stop, and once you started and you swore off, and this time I meant business, and yet my steering wheel turned against my will into fast food restaurants. Seriously, I didn't want to do it, but I had to. Well, there is no middle of the road solution. So it says, we were in a position where life was becoming impossible. I mean, look, I shared these things about like going to the bathroom on myself in the car. I couldn't shower properly, couldn't wipe myself. I couldn't walk from my apartment to my parking garage. I couldn't pay my rent. Like that is an impossible life. Life was becoming impossible. And it says, I had passed into the region from which there's no return through human aid. There was no one on this planet that could help me. And it says I have two alternatives. So I had two alternatives then, and I have two alternatives today. So on a day when I just feel sad and just like FYI, I hate to spoil this or to tell this to any newcomers here, but like life in recovery could be really uncomfortable. I ate so I didn't have to feel uncomfortable. Because I actually thought that feeling discomfort would kill me. And that is not an exaggeration. Like, that's not a dramatic statement. Like, I really thought if I have to sit in loneliness, I'll combust, you know? Like, I can't do it. And now on a day like today, when I just feel really uncomfortable and I just want to, like, I want to lash out, I want to behave badly. I want to, you know, I'm looking for somebody to make me feel better about myself. And if I do not go, and if I do not accept spiritual help, because that's one of my alternatives, the other is that I am going to go back to the food. So it's like, I better show up tonight and share my story, even if I don't feel good. I have to. I have to show up tonight and tell you all that God has done for me what I couldn't do for myself, including giving me the strength and ability to show up and share on a day when I don't feel like it, when I don't feel like myself and I'm scared and my fears of abandonment and rejection and not enoughness are just like trying to run the show. And the solution is the way that I perfect and enlarge my spiritual life is through work and self-sacrifice for others. And that's not because I'm like this really good person that you should all want to emulate. Right? Like the food beat me into a state of reasonableness. Like, I'm not this like morally superior person. I'm a person who says either I'm going to show up tonight and be of help to someone, or I'm going to end up in the pizza. And I'm not going to end up in the pizza tonight. I mean, I might, who knows? But I would be on my way. And you know, and I think that it is such a good reminder, right? That really, like, we have but two alternatives, and there's no middle of the road, you know. And I have a disease that will kill me, and I am so grateful, you know. Today, I truly have this life that's beyond my wildest dreams, and let me tell you what that means, because in disease, you know, I would have like listed out the life beyond my wildest dreams. And I share this a lot, but I heard someone kind of allude to this in a meeting once, and I loved it because it's like, well, in disease, my wildest dreams would have been, you know, oh, my friends and I were on a yacht this weekend. You know, I'm married to someone that's a millionaire, right? Like, I have all these kids. I'm a famous singer and motivational speaker, right? Like, that would have been the life beyond my wildest dreams. But I'm serious when I tell you that never in my wildest dreams did I think that I could feel sad and afraid and eat my three abstinent meals. And at 7 o'clock p.m., I know that I'm not going to eat any more food today. I don't even want to. That is a life beyond my wildest dreams. And for anyone here who's in relapse in the food, you get it, right? Like, you probably can't dream that that would ever be a world in which you could exist. And I'm here to say that it is. And it takes, but I mean, look, but for the grace of God, right? Like, this unmerited favor gave me the willingness to, for one day, ask somebody to tell me what to do. What do I do? And I just tell me what to do and I'll do it. Tell me what to eat and I'll eat it. And it takes a lot of work. You know, this recovery life, you know, I have a disease that will kill me. Like, I have a fatal illness, whether I like it or not. And not even whether I like it or not, whether I'm willing to admit it. Even if I say, oh, I don't, it doesn't mean I don't. It will still kill me. Like, you know, the truth, like, it's the truth. And so it's like, I have to be willing to give a lot of my spare time to this program. I have to get up early for this program. I have become a morning person. That's a life beyond my wildest dreams. I love being a morning person. It's like by 7 a.m., I'm like, I have accomplished so much. Like, what's there to do now? You know, it's so funny how we really change in recovery. And like, some people are probably like, this girl is full of crap, but it's really true, you know? Like, it's really my life. And you know, what does that look like? Like, what does life in recovery look like? I will say in the very beginning, it looked like making a lot of calls. I would make calls in absolute tears. Like, I would leave voicemails for people. They probably couldn't even understand what I was saying. And I don't know that we talk a lot about what's it like those first few days and weeks getting out of the food. Like, I hear a lot of like pink cloud or food neutrality shared in meetings, but I'd like to share that it was like some of the hardest, most painful, most cringy, I wanted to die and crawl out of my skin moments of my entire life. Those first few days and weeks of getting abstinent, I had to make a lot of calls and I just had to say, I want to eat, I need help. Boom, done. That's it. Do I have the humility to say that? I want to eat, I need help. Do I still have the humility to say, I need help? I called my sponsor yesterday morning. I left the house, went on a walk, and I just called and I said, I need help. I need help getting out of this. You know, I need help. And can I say those three words and not have to explain away, well, I'm really okay. Everything's really fine. You know, I just want to make sure everybody thinks that the Lindsay's got it together. And it's like, but I don't. Why do I have to pretend I've got it together? You know? Here we all are in a 12-step program for addicts. Why do we have to pretend that we've got it all together? You know, like, I mean, thank God I didn't use today, and but I'm not perfect. I'm really not, you know, and you know, I do so part of this work for me is I do a nightly review. You know, every night I do the inventory. Well, almost every night I do the inventory and I look at, you know, where constructively, in a way that builds me up, in a way that gets me closer to God, in a way that's, you know, positive momentum, looking at, yeah, how was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened today? What's coming up for me? What's blocking me from God? Where do I need more God in my life? And lately, I've found that I've been more critical. It's like people annoy me a little bit more. Like, I'm finding the like nitty gritty thing in everybody and just being critical. And I don't like it at all. And it feels similar to the way the food did. And then I'm like, I really want this to be gone. Like, I'm miserable. I don't want to be like this. And I'm powerless to change that. Tells me in the big book, I'm powerless over my self-centeredness. That was almost more difficult for me to admit than being powerless over food because it feels like, how am I powerless over being selfish? How am I powerless over being critical? But that gives me this opportunity to connect with my higher power and just to say, all right, God, I really need help here. This doesn't feel good. Can you help me? Can you help me just to like love people today? Can you help me to see the good in them? You know, please just direct my thinking. And this is where, you know, this is where it's just like the faith really comes into play because it's like, what does it look like to move forward in faith today and to show up believing that something's happened, that something's changed, that something's going on, that God is really working. And I was told once in the beginning, it's the idea of like, you know, when you put your phone on the charging pad, and I don't sit there and be like, how is this working? Is this actually working? Is the phone actually being charged? Well, what does that mean? How did that happen? And then when I take it off, is it really at 100%? No, absolutely not. I set the phone on the pad and then I pick it up and I go on about my day, believing that the phone is fully charged. I don't check on it. And it's like the same with the meditation and the prayer and this connection with the higher power. Like I just show up, put myself on the charging pad, whether that looks like writing, praying, getting quiet, showing up on a meeting like this and sharing, working with a sponsee. And then it's just like, okay, take the phone off the pad and I am going to proceed in the rest of my day, believing that this higher power is with me, gave me what I needed. I have that. I have this connection all through the day, and it's sort of just woven into the fabric of who I am and how I go about my day because it's a design for living. It's a way of life. It's not like I finished the steps and I'm done now. Thank you very much. And I'm gonna be, have a healthy body and a great life. No, it's like all day, every day, I'm in this book, I'm in the steps, I'm living this way of life, and it becomes a part of who I am. And then I continue to take action and more action, in 10, 11, and 12. It's like, all right, well, you think you might be done, but we're still going to give more action. Okay, now I gave you this whole instruction, more action, right? Because it's like I have to do a lot of work to stay well and to stay sober and to stay connected in this program. And then I truly get this life, that's beyond my wildest dreams, where I can show up even if I don't want to, even when I'm not feeling great, and still be of service, still have a purpose. In what world was that ever possible, right? So God makes that possible. Thank you for letting me share.
Okay, thank you so much, Lindsay.